Welcome, everybody, to No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett.
What are you Denny laughing McClellan. At already, Denny? What are you
because
laughing at?
We just had a couple of false starts, that's all.
We were offsides twice.
Well, you are in Detroit. The NFL specializes in that, you know. So
Bob from West Palm Beach, who one listener writes in and says he shouldn't mention it 10 times per show. So I'll just mention that you're in West Palm Beach today.
He is.
We can keep it there. Monday's going to be something. Bob's going to be in New York then. You're going to be in Nashville.
Yes.
I'm going to be attempting to hold down the fort here as we have our next edition.
You are more than capable of holding down the fort.
This is Thursday afternoon. We're taping this May 9th. Got a lot to do on this show. Going to talk about the Tigers. Going to talk about Rod Wood, the Lions president's comments this week. Red Sox go to the White House with some players and not others. And John Daly utilizing the Disabilities Act to get into the PGA tournament. We're going to talk about that as well as culture in sports, in particular as the Celtics crash and burn against the Bucks. So let's start with the Tigers. Matt Boyd last night pitching quite well. He's having an outstanding season. Last night, six innings pitched.
Wednesday night.
Leadoff man hit a home run. After that, he was pretty perfect. Two more hits is all he gave up. He's 4-2 on the year. Projected, if you went over the season, to be a 20-game winner. And here's the bizarre thing. I actually tweeted this week. So I say that just because we're all trying to get into this medium. And my point was, in most situations, when a player plays well, baseball or any other sport, there's talk about extending his contract, yep, making sure you keep him. But when the Tigers do well, or a Tiger does well, the talk is, well, he's better trade bait now, and what will they get for him when the trade deadline comes? I guess I don't want to point to them as the only team that does this. This is kind of what we talked about before the season. So many teams are in rebuilding mode that in fact, some people say up to half the league, that you have conversations like this, and nobody raises a flag anymore.
You're totally right. And you look at this guy. I don't know who this guy is. He claims he's Ronnie Rodriguez, but it doesn't look like the same Ronnie Rodriguez I saw last year. Guy's been amazing. Yeah. And, you know, he had a tremendous game Wednesday night. Again, he's hitting 340, and a former teammate of Denny McClain's once won an American League batting championship hitting 340. Not that he is going to go ahead and continue this pace, but I immediately thought to myself, oh, boy, Al Avila is going to go on another week-long bender right around the trade deadline. Boyd's gone. Rodriguez is gone. Castellanos is gone. And virtually anybody else is gone for more minor league suspects.
I would indicate to either one of you guys that he's going to be gone. As long as he's hitting 340, he's not going anywhere. If he's hitting 300, he's not going anywhere. You got to
because Al does this all the time.
We're not building anything around anybody right now.
Right.
The big gorilla, as I call him, the guy that hits number three or four whenever he wants to hit three and four.
Cabrera.
He's hitting 300, right around 300 again. But he's the guy you still should be keeping the ball club circling around to build some kind of a moving forward team. We're building around nobody right now. And you're right about it. Every time somebody starts to become a little bit of a star, they talk about he's going to Arizona, he's going to Chicago, he's going to Guam. Wherever they're going. And I don't get it anymore. But that's the reason why Al Avila was an assistant to everybody for 18 or 19 years in professional baseball. I don't think he's got, with all due respect to Al, I like Al, but I don't think he's got the resources to run a baseball team.
If it worked, if the prospects came through, and I guess we really don't know, you got to give some jury being out credit to him, although Lynn Henning on our show last week mentioned how a lot of these trades that they made, these guys are not moving up through the minors. The only one we've seen so far is Candelaria, and he's okay, but who knows?
He is. The Tigers' third baseman is okay. In a leadoff spot Wednesday night, he went 0-for-5 again. His batting average thus fell to .211, and he has worked hard to make himself a less-than-mediocre defensive third
baseman.
Yes,
you're right about that.
They did, and they had to move Nick Castellanos out of that position where he was getting a lot better, put him in a foreign position to make room for who? Candelario?
Now, listen, Nick is not going to get any better than what he is right now. You know, I've told this story before, but I was in Erie, Pennsylvania a couple of years ago with K-Line when they were working with Castellanos. They were trying to take him out of third base before he got killed and put him in right field. So K-Line went down there for 3, 4, 5 days, worked with him every day, and I just happened to come in town the last 2 days he was there, and Al said to me, you know what? this kid can't catch a fly ball. I said, oh, well. I said, stop it. You don't talk like that. He says, first time in my life I've ever gone out of my way to tell people.
Well, he never saw Howard Johnson play. Well, right.
That's off the record. Now you're quoting K-Line off the record, which is crappy.
That's okay. But the bottom line is that's what he said. He said, this guy can't play. So I said, well, what do you do? Move him back to third base? He's something like, and I'm paraphrasing, he's going to get killed over there.
Yeah.
So, you know, they keep running him back and forth between positions. I don't know where he can play, but he's in the right league. That's the good news. He's in the right league with the DH. Yeah.
But this is just a quick aside here. Bob and I were at a game 4 or 5 years ago when Castellanos was, you know, not a rookie, but had just come up. Ball goes right through his legs, and Bob said, "Well, he's no Brooks Robinson." And then there's a girl, a young girl with a tiger cap and a glove and a ball and everything sitting next to him. And Bob says, "What are the chances she's ever heard of Brooks Robinson?" Of course, she never heard of Brooks Robinson.
Of course, that's the way it goes right now. You look ahead at their schedule, though. And we're going to find out something about this ball club. As we tape this Thursday morning, the Tigers have one more game with the Angels Thursday afternoon. And they've got a great chance to win because they are starting the Immortal, just stopping by Detroit on the way to his eventual enshrinement in Cooperstown, New York.
Oh, God.
What's the kid's name again?
Ryan Carpenter.
He's 28 years old, and they're bringing him up from Toledo, where he was one and four with a 4.09 ERA.
But he's had a stellar minor league career. He has 104 decisions in the minor leagues. That seems like an awful lot. Guys, if they have potential, usually come up.
So you know what comes up after this, though? They got four at Minnesota. Have you been following the Twins?
Twins are doing great.
23-12, and they're leading the American League Central. Then after that, on Monday, JV comes into town with the Houston Astros, and they're 22-15 and leading the American League West. So the Tigers are going to find out a lot, I would think, anyway, over these next seven ballgames.
Well, it's back to the whole Boyd thing. So it was the article by Ken Rosenthal in the Atlantic. He's a very well-regarded baseball writer, as you know. Appears on TV, too, a lot in the postseason games. And he goes, would the Tigers trade Matt Boyd? Of course they would, but preferably for a specific target. He's writing about it matter-of-factly. He goes, while the rebuilding Detroit club likely is in a position to wholly refuse offers on virtually anyone on their roster. In other words, this is just the way business is done now. If you're any good, see you later.
I got a question for Danny.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Did you see how many pitches Boyd threw in that Wednesday night game? He threw 93. They pulled him after six innings, 93 pitches. Now, the score was 8-1, and then Stumpf came in, of course, and immediately gave up a run. Now, I hate to do this in your day stuff, but don't you want to stay on the mound even if it's 8-1?
Of course you do. You want to stay out there. Listen, you're out there, you're blowing, you can't pitch tomorrow. So why don't you and let the other guys in the bullpen rest? Just let the one guy just pitch the ball game. Everybody gets a day of rest because this pitching staff is being worked to death, right? You're using 3, 4, and 5 pitchers every night.
Yep.
Let one guy carry the load one night. You got a 7-8-run lead. Let him play.
There's a reason why the three of us ought to be in the broadcast booth for the Tigers, because Jack Morris is even more feels way about pitching even more than you. That guy should pitch longer. He pitched to pitch 9 innings, and he's the one who sarcastically said to me at an event a few years ago, pretty soon the starter's going to go 3 innings and then 6 other guys are going to go 1 each. And he said last night, well, Matt Boyd is begging, you know, begging, but talking to the pitching coach to see if he can stay in, kind of campaigning, but there's no way that's going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you another.
Eli, that's already happened, though. We see these guys who are starting games now. Some clubs are doing this in Major League Baseball. They pitch an inning, bring in the next guy, pitch an inning. I mean, maybe it's the new wave. And speaking of Jack Morris, Jack was hosting a Tigers panel at the Detroit Economic Club this week, and he asked a good question of Nick Castellanos. Said, what's changed in the clubhouse between Brad Ausmus being the manager of the Tigers and Ron Gardenhire taking over? So Nick says, and I quote, Brad is more analytical. He's very intelligent, but sometimes he doesn't communicate his feelings very well. It's not his fault. It's just how he is, but he's great at being that way. Without question, he's a great manager. Gardy, continuing the quote, is a better communicator. He's more available, and he relates to his players more. He makes guys feel more comfortable, which I think is important.
Oh, for God's sake, experience. Stop it.
But anyway, so those were honest comments, and the reporters afterward, you know, rushed to Nick and said, would you elaborate on those comments?
Ridiculous.
What did you mean? And now Nick's backpedaling. Wait a minute now. You know, I mean, come on.
That's as much as Nick has said since he's been here, if that's true.
Well, it's evidence of how managerial styles has changed. The exact opposite of that style was Detroit's great manager, Sparky Anderson, who ruined more than one young player by saying, pitchers. I will never pat you on the back. He ruined Bobby Tolan in Cincinnati.
He ruined a lot of pitchers.
There was a guy here, my buddy Scott Lusader told me that when Nelson Simmons came up about, I don't know, back in the late 80s, kind of a shy kid, really needed a pat in the back. Sparky treated him like, hey, you're in the big leagues. Yep. I don't got to nurture you. Now, maybe it works sometimes. Who am I to say? The great George Sparky Anderson.
Well, George Sparky Anderson ruined more pitchers than maybe most managers have ever done in their entire career. Sparky, if you were in the big leagues, he didn't accept any kind of injury unless you just couldn't even touch your butt with your arm. He did not allow you to take a day off. He wanted, if you were one of the 4 days, you know, every fourth day, every fifth day, you were going to pitch. And there's many stories about the Cincinnati Reds about the guys who got hurt and shortened their careers because if they did not go out there on their day, they were getting released or sent back to Guam.
I think that was Gary Nolan was
Gary Nolan was the biggest one that comes to mind.
But you know, I'm thinking about my career going back when I started in the business in 1974. I think some more. He might be the single biggest egotist I ever covered or was ever around. Sparky. And I like Sparky personally. Yeah,
he's great. I love Sparky.
Personally.
Loved him.
But, I mean, this guy managed the greatest eight-man lineup in the entire history of Major League Baseball. And he won. And then we all went, you and I anyway, I went to the press conference at Detroit years ago when they fired Les Moss and they introduced, Ralph Houk resigned and they introduced Les Moss. Houk comes to the microphone in front of all of us and says, ladies and gentlemen, the job here is done. Because they had all these tremendous young players coming up.
Right.
Sparky comes in, those aren't my players, and he gets rid of one by one. He gets rid of all those guys. He tears it down, builds it up again, and, of course, it took him to 84 to win.
Well, let me ask you a question. We got the trading deadline coming up here pretty soon, right? Couple of months. Mm-hmm. Out of the next four or five guys I'm going to name, which one is going to be the number one guy in the post? Boyd, Castellanos, Norris, or Turnbull?
On the post, what do you mean? On the trading block?
Which one's going to be traded?
They won't trade Turnbull. Somebody's
going.
Who's suing? Yeah.
Tough to answer that. I don't know. I don't know who it'll be.
Well taken. I think Nick, they've been talking about trading Nick for a long time now. I think, you know, any club in the American League, as Denny pointed out, any club that needs some more offense down the stretch, you'd be foolish not to get Nick Castellanos.
I agree. He's ready to hit. He comes to the ballpark to only hit.
I would think, though, a left-handed starter, if he continues to pitch like
worth
this,
his weight in gold,
would be by far the hottest commodity, no hands down. Speaking of pitchers, so this week, Mike Fiers throws a no-hitter. Yeah. I read a story on this. It's only the 300th no-hitter in baseball history. The first, 1876, one George Bradley. You know what his record was that year? 45-19. He completed 63 of his 64 starts. So the game has changed.
Well, they brought in the closer for the 64th start, right?
and you keep on mentioning, speaking of closers, that Kimbrell of the Red Sox still isn't signed?
Keuchel.
No, he's Houston.
Craig Kimbrell, the Red Sox relief pitcher. Yeah, he's awesome, man. Yeah, he's not quite what he used to be, but still.
But
he's reduced his demands salary-wise. He's only looking for a 1 year. He might be looking for a one-hour contract by now.
What some teams are doing is they're going without it. Now, Shane Green is our closer, the Tigers' closer.
Right.
He was a starter and didn't make it as a starter. They turned him into a closer. When Dennis Eckersley, who was the first closer who actually played that role of just pitching one inning, was a starter that they didn't really believe in as a starter. So for one inning, you can take a starter who's failed or isn't make the rotation and turn him into a closer is why some teams are going without closers. And the Red Sox contend they can win a World Series without a real closer.
But then remember, they also took our own Michigan native, John Smoltz, who was a great starting pitcher. And they deliberately said, we need a closer. You're going to be a great closer, too. And that's one of the main reasons why Smoltz also is in the Hall of Fame.
Well, Smoltz not only became a great starter, but became a great closer.
Well, that's what I mean. It wasn't that we failed as a starter. They decided we need more help in the bullpen. You would be a great guy out there for us.
Well, before we get into any other baseball, before we get into some national news, did make a little bit of a splash this week when Rod Wood, the Lions president, was at one of those gatherings like in a little city outside Detroit. Actually, this was in Grand Rapids, but they kind of have the sense.
It sounded like a kumbaya gathering, you know, for the Lions suckers. That's what
right.
It sounded
and a lot
like
of me. Times guys let their guard down and they say things there that they wouldn't say to the Detroit media, thinking that maybe it won't get out. But here's what he said, actually kind of threw former owner Bill William Clay Ford under the bus in order to do what I believe is the number one job of any coach and any general manager or team president in all of sports. You kiss the owner's ass every opportunity you have, because it is one of the best ways to keep a job if you don't necessarily deserve to keep it. Not that Rod Wood doesn't, but I remember my old buddy Wade Fonts couldn't finish talking about a zone blitz without crediting Mr. Ford for everything.
So here is
Rod Wood answering a question from a disgruntled lifelong Lion fan in Grand Rapids this week.
I'm 58. I've been a fan since I was 8 years old. So that's 50 years of pain. Why is it so hard to instill a winning culture in Detroit?
We're the same age, so I can feel your pain. I think, you know, it's a great question. And I think a lot of it is, you know, the people at the top running the organization, myself included, setting the right tone, starting with ownership. And I think Mrs. Ford is a very different owner than her husband, and has a lot less patience and a lot less tolerance for mediocrity, which is why we've made some of the changes that we've made.
So Eli writes all of us, our producer, Brandon McAfee and Denny, and he writes all of us an email this morning, as he always does before a show, talking about what he thinks some of the bullet points should be. And he writes this story, and he writes Ron Wood. I think, is that the guy who runs the Lions now? And I'm like, no, I think if Ronnie Wood were actually running the Lions, he might do just as well as Rod Wood.
Of course, we're talking about the Rolling Stones bandmate, but let's, okay, so we heard what Rod Wood said. So my question to you guys is, and I'm really not sure the answer. Optimists say, yes, Rod Wood is right. Mrs. Ford is different. She allowed, she moved Martin Mayhew out. She moved Tom LaWand out. She took, you know, strong action. And now she's got this Patriot group in there, as Rod Wood would hire them, meaning Matt Patricia and, of course, Bob Quinn. So
how'd that work out last year?
Well, it didn't work out too well last year. So is it the optimist will say this is the difference, and the pessimist will say nothing will change?
Listen, kissing the owner's butt is always a nice thing to do. I mean, it's
required.
Right. And it extends one's contract. You won't get fired in the middle of it. So, you know, let them do what they think they have to do. And they're selling tickets. Remember that. They're out there trying to sell tickets. Every little group produces sales of tickets, maybe some advertisers. So we're talking, there's always hundreds of thousands of dollars at risk when you go out and make one of these appearances. But Mrs. Ford doesn't know anything about football. I think everybody knows that. And I think what happens is, I think what happens here is just she likes somebody on the team. She loves our quarterback. She just falls over backwards for our quarterback. So as long as you are on the favorable side.
He's such a nice young man. He's lovely. Well, at our Christmas party last year, he went out of his way to say hello to me. What is his name again? Is it Matthew or something?
Long as you're on the right side of Mrs. Ford, you're going to get nice baby gifts. You're going to get nice strollers. You may even get a new Ford. And who knows what else that she's capable of doing. But,
Mrs.
you know, when you're worth
Mrs.
a billion
Ford.
Dollars, you
team.
Can do just about
sell
anything you
team,
want to do.
Mrs. Ford.
Listen, we've been asking them to sell the club for 60 years, and nothing ever comes close. They're never going to sell this football team.
Of course not. There's no reason
all right,
to.
So, all right, look, I got a story here. So could we get off the subject of the FLs, please?
Yes, we may.
Since you segued into the NFL. Did you guys see this written by Andrew Marchand in the New York Post, I think, yesterday?
No.
The NFL Network is being forced to cut $20 million out of its projected budget. They've eliminated at least five shows, including one that featured Deion Sanders. And Marchand reports that there's all kinds of controversy, backstabbing, dissension.
Why?
Why?
Going on because they're cutting five shows and $20 million. That means they're going to lay off producers. They're going to lay
why?
Off writers.
Hold on a second.
Why?
Because it's a network.
Because
and
they ain't making enough money.
Oh, okay. I understand.
So let me ask you this. Who actually watches the NFL Network except for a game or two during the season? I mean, right now we're in May, and they're loaded 24 hours with this little half-hour show, this little hour show. Anybody watching that stuff?
It's good point.
You are. I guarantee you,
are. I am not.
You aren't watching
not
the
football season.
You're kidding.
No.
Well,
it's not football season.
I hope they're not going to fire Richie Eisen, our former U of M guy. In fact, you know, let me just throw this in there. I'm watching the Celtics series, and Chris Webber now is working with Marv. We see Jalen Rose all the time on ESPN. He's incredibly successful. You know, I want to give a little shout-out to my Michigan guys. We covered them back in the old days, Denny. They were great kids. And just what a, you know, they were trendsetters. And look at their careers. You know, the Fab Five was highly criticized. Chris and Jalen and Juwan Howard made $500 million in salary. Juwan is being talked about as being an NBA coach. And Chris and Jalen have made it in a second career very successfully. So, you know,
they just followed our lead.
So, you know, credit to
them. How many of them completed their academic degrees at your alma mater?
None.
You know? I don't know. I'm just asking.
Chris went after his sophomore year, and Jalen went after his junior year.
Yeah. Well, how many have graduated from Michigan? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I don't know, but the point is Jalen went to class and actually learned something there. So I give him credit. Yeah. Okay. That's all. I just want to throw it out there.
And you know what? Between all of them, they've paid their dues, too. I mean, they had some real bad shows on from time to time. And they had the right, you know, if they'd had an Eli Zarrett working with them all the time, they'd have been much better off.
Oh, well, yeah, I think Chris
but
has come along.
But those guys were in the middle of that whole Ed Martin scandal at Michigan, too.
Yeah.
And you look at a place like the University of Michigan, and you think to yourself, they don't cheat. Michigan would never cheat. And look at the scandal in that basketball
program. Let me tell you something. That you brought up something that we used to talk about on our old show, and this Martin thing. It absolutely infuriated me that the only guy that suffered any damage there was Martin and a couple of guys around him. None of the players got punished. None of the players.
You shouldn't.
And you know what else? They all take the bribes. They all take the cars. They all take the women. They all take this. And nobody ever pays for anything except the guy who is giving them the money and the cars and what have you. You mean to tell me that the guy taking it's not as guilty as the guy giving it?
Well, I think you know, Chris would come on our show when we did the show at Channel 2. And he would. I think I said it on this show, so I know it sounds like I'm repeating myself.
I don't remember.
But he said that, you know, they're sitting in the stands wearing my jersey, $60 back then, right. Probably cost $120 now or more. And he can't afford a pizza. And he started taking money from Ed Martin so he could eat. You know, his father, Maisie, was, you know, a working
really
man in Detroit.
Believe that he didn't have money to eat?
I don't think he did. I don't think he had any money at all.
Don't they feed you in the dorms? When I went to college, they did. That's part of your scholarship. You get three squares
in
the dormitory cafeteria, don't you?
That's just an excuse to take the money. Or they may be saying, you know, I should be eating filet mignon tonight, not Big Macs.
Well,
so let's go get filet mignon. Let's go get lobster. I mean, we'd all like to have that every night.
It's a very convoluted system. Also, one of the Fab Five.
They don't ever clean it up. My point is they never have cleaned it up.
They can't clean up. This trial just ended.
Yeah, it just ended.
You know, and the point is these players are commodities. They have value. It's worth millions of dollars depending on where they go, to a shoe company, to a coach and all that. And so it's a phony economy, and it creates situations like this.
The thing that shocked me about this federal trial, and I followed it rather closely, the bottom line is these two guys who were on trial, this is the second time they've been convicted.
And they're low-level guys. The only coach
but
that—
not the point. Why would you do it twice? Just go in there and say, mea culpa, Hail Mary, please help me. Let me out of here.
Well,
the thing about it is, I don't know if a lot of you folks listening right now know this. If you've read Denny's autobiographies, I've read both of them, one written by Eli, as a matter of fact. But Denny McLean spent a bunch of time in one of his prison sentences with John Gotti.
Junior.
And I'm mentioning this because you look at a guy like Gotti— Gotti's too smart to let that low-level stuff reach him. They finally got him. But that stuff is handled below him. Gotti doesn't even know about some of this stuff. So the head coaches now are so smart, they make sure this stuff doesn't get up to them. They don't know what's going on. So they say it's all handled by, as you say, the underlings and the kind of low-life lower guys, and they keep it from going all the way to the top, and that's how these guys
Chuck
are protected.
Person,
that's how
Auburn,
John Gotti was protected.
Right. See, Denny, another prison reference you can't escape.
No, that's not my point. If you're gonna quote accurately, that's all. I won't go into it right now. But
it was John Gotti Jr. anyway.
Yeah.
Not senior. Junior.
Senior was gone a long time before.
I didn't know that. I thought it was John Gotti Senior.
No, senior. He was not in prison with the Teflon Don himself. Fascinating character.
Never
met him. Never was around him. Never had anything to do. John Gotti Senior.
Okay.
I met John Gotti Junior.
Yeah. In prison.
In circumstances that were beyond my control.
You said he had really good... you said that he would eat caviar every night.
No, I never... That's there. You guys, go again. Caviar. We had a little lobster once in a while. We had a little filet mignon once in a while. But let me tell you, it came...
But how was the wine choice? Was the wine choice good?
Wine choice was not bad from time to time. But what happens is the officers, the correctional officers, they would bring John 2, 3, 4 times a week a meal after the place was locked down. Uh-huh. All of a sudden, somebody come knocking on your door and say, hey, listen, you want to have a little bit of tea? And you walk out there, and it looked like Thanksgiving all over again. In fact, Thanksgiving night, it was unbelievable. I mean, there was so much turkey. He fed the entire crew up there. There were 60 guys in a level, and everybody got out of their cell and ate turkey for four or five hours.
I just can't imagine, like, the catering truck pulling up to the prison.
No, it's not a catering truck. It's the guards themselves bring it in.
Oh, and obviously he gives them something in exchange.
Whatever it is. No, he knew most of these guys. They guys from the neighborhood. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of guys that he knew.
Were the prison guards?
Yes.
Jeez.
Remember,
yeah,
they're all New Yorkers. Right. Every one of them's a New Yorker. Keep that in mind.
People listen to us right now. You're watching your HBO shows. You're reading your books. You actually think prison is hard? You really believe prison is hard, don't you?
Let me tell you something, pal. It is.
I wonder how Michael Cohen's doing. He's supposed to be at a cushy one now. Hey, but meanwhile, taking advantage of advanced technology, is a choice.
Kidding.
You don't have to have an iPhone, a luxury car, a 75-inch 4K big screen like me. But we like convenience and comfort, and we're thankful we can afford it. I also got something very expensive, I thought. Multifocal lens implants, the Rolls-Royce surgery. But you know what? When you add up everything else, how much you spend on new frames, new lenses, new contacts, the breakage, all the costs, eye surgery will actually can save you money in the long run. And you'll see perfect 24/7, whether it's LASIK for people 40 under, this is all from Dr. Yaldo, or multifocal implants for people 45 plus that have reading issues. Get rid of those readers. Get rid of those glasses and contacts. He is Michigan's leader, Dr. Yaldo, over 30,000 LASIK procedures, over 20,000 lens replacements. All you got to do, call and make an appointment. The evaluation is free. And by the way, these surgeries are painless and take just a few minutes. Enjoy the summer. Be outside. Don't worry about your contacts falling out when you go swimming. Go with the best. 800-398-EYES or go to the Aldo Eye Center.
Now, are you going to give me an appointment next week?
I'll set you up.
Set me up and I'll go.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, yes.
Eli, he's writing me emails in like senior citizen letters in bold. They're like an inch high. I sent him, I used the same font on my computer. I sent him a notebook. I said, why are you writing so large? He sends me a notebook. He says, because I can't see. I said, why don't you go see Dr. Yaldo?
We're going to fix you up. I promise we'll fix you up. Go ahead.
That's not the reason I send big print, by the way. Yes. We now have a brand new, wonderful, proud sponsor of the Red Shovel Network, and that is Hall Financial. Drew and Mike, no BS news. ML's Soul of Detroit, and now with No Filter Sports. That's us, folks. Mm-hmm. We're saluting now David Hall for investing in a new medium like podcasting, and it is something. If you want to refinance your home, Hall Financial would love to save you all kinds of money. You can email David at, now to get your pen and paper out, okay? I'll give you this a couple times. dhall@hallfg.com. That's dhall@hallfg.com or call Hall Financial at 248-308-5000. That's 248-308-5000. Maybe it's your first home or your dream home. Maybe you want to take money out of your home. Give David Hall a chance and get lower rates, better options, and more personal attention. They have over, now listen, 600 five-star reviews. That's incredible. Industry average for refi is 44 days. Hall Financial, 19 days. So you can get your money in and out in less than 3 weeks. They'll fight for you even if you have, as they say, a dent in your credit history. A dent. Email.
Like you?
Email at dhall, dhall@hallfg.com, dhall@hallfg.com, or call 248-308-5000 and tell them No Filter sent you. Denny, Eli, and the other guy, Bob, take the word I out of my vocabulary space.
I put up with you, I have to get some credit for that, don't I? And don't forget, folks, if you have comments to make about the show, we have a hotline for you to call, and you can leave a message for us, anything you want. And we'll likely get to them, too. We got some good ones today. The number is 760-89-BALLS, or if you prefer to email the show, that's asknofilter@gmail.com. And now, let's go to the mail.
Oh, you have some.
You got some good ones. First up today, we have Dominic Vitale, or Vitale, the way Dick pronounces it, I don't know. He's challenging what the three of us have been saying about Miggy. And he goes ahead and explains, and he's totally right about this, that the Tigers had to pay Cabrera all that money,
yes, no doubt,
all those years, or they would have lost him,
sure,
for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what the Wings did with Henrik Zetterberg, the same kind of thing. In Detroit, not exactly a glamour town, you have to overpay sometimes to keep people. And they knew when they cut that deal with Miggy that he wasn't going to be as good at the end of his career. And that's what he did. So anyway, he goes on to say he loves the show. Keep up the good work. And he says he wants to be in Jupiter, Florida with me at his favorite restaurant, Jetty's. Dominic, I don't really know that place.
Dominic, listen to me for a second. Just please listen to me. If you go to dinner with him, make sure you bring plenty of money.
You're going to talk about Cabrera. You're going to talk about dinner?
About that. Talking about him because he's got fish hooks in his pocket. Once his hands go in, he can't get them out because of the fish hooks.
What else you got?
All right, here's what else I got. Here comes, again, I'm having a little problems with these
By the way,
Gaspar Genovese or Genovese? All right. And he writes in, he says he just loves the show. One of the highlights of my week, listening to your podcast, lives in Arizona, but lived in Detroit. He has a complaint. And you know what? I think he's totally right. And I think all of us think he's totally right. And we need to be more careful about this. He says the show on Monday, when Denny and I got into it on the slider and stuff like that, was almost unlistenable because all three of us talk over each other a little too much. Now, I've heard that complaint before, and that's point well taken. And taken under consideration.
As to your last comment, in fairness, Denny said as far as Cabrera, who's hitting over 300, that when the warm weather comes, the long ball should come back.
Right, it'll come back.
We didn't totally eviscerate that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I got some more, unless you got some you want to read.
Go ahead. I don't have anything on that.
You sure? Okay. So now we have Thomas Howlett coming before.
I know Tom Howlett. You're kidding. What does Tom Howlett say? Yeah, I know Tom Howlett. Go ahead.
So Tom Howlett wants to take me personally to challenge what I said about the Michigan quarterbacks who've been leaving one by one by one by after another, the Michigan program and transferring elsewhere. He's a Michigan grad, and he takes umbrage. He says, Morris Malzone and Brandon Peters all graduated from Michigan and then decided to transfer to another program. I know that, Tom, but they didn't play at Michigan. Not that much, after who knows what promises were made. And he says, Bob, your attempt to dump on Michigan in this instance fails. And he also, he's trying to make this a Michigan-Michigan State thing. Your alma mater had quarterback Messiah DeWeaver, and he transferred out of the program. Messiah DeWeaver was ranked the number 28 quarterback in America. And I covered Michigan for 15 years, much more than Michigan State. I was much closer to the Michigan people than I ever was to the Michigan State people. Ironically, Eli was much closer to the Michigan State people than he was to his own alma mater.
Well, that's a long story. Right.
I stand on what I said, man. I understand where you're going with this, but it's not with me, believe me, a Michigan versus Michigan State.
Enough. Go ahead. Your turn.
No, I'll just say.
You got another one?
Back in 1979, I'd say it was, and I was working for Mike Ilitch. I was the play-by-play guy for the Little Caesars softball team. I got $25 a game. I think I told that story.
I was there. I know that.
And so Ilitch's son, Atanas, and his other son, Chris, went to Cranbrook. And I would jog with those guys after they had cross-country practice with Chris Ilitch and Atanas Ilitch. And Tom Howlett was there also. So I met those guys back.
Oh, what a great story.
Great story.
Has your boy Tom forgotten that I, as a Michigan State graduate, hosted Johnny Orr's television show in Detroit?
You know how many people are bored by your Michigan show one time?
Come on, Tom. Give me a break.
You know how bored people are right now listening to you two guys talk about Michigan to Michigan State?
And you two talking over each other again. Okay.
That's not a subject of interest in the state of Michigan. I know Michigan to Michigan State. We're sorry for that, too.
Not the direction you're going.
Here's a story that bothers me. John Daly getting to use a cart at the PGA tournament.
Why does it bother you?
It bothers me because it changes the rules. It isn't fair. If he is and the reason they're allowing it is because he's a very popular guy and fans love him. But there's no way that somebody should there's a reason why the Disabilities Act was passed. And I support the Disabilities Act. You know, somebody in a wheelchair ought to be able to go into a public building. Somebody with a wooden leg shouldn't be fired from his job because he's got a disability. But that's for people who can't, who need a, I don't want to say a leg up, who need access. John Daly has made a lot of money. This is the PGA Tour. What if he's allowed to play in a cart, which isn't fair, because playing without a cart is easier than walking, which is part of the game. And what if somebody loses FedEx points or his tour card because Daly finishes 39th and robs him of points? It's not fair. It's not right. And the only reason they did it was to be politically correct. And I'm upset that Daly would use the Disabilities Act to play with a bunch of millionaires.
First of all, the law is on his side. If he qualifies, they're going to let him, and they want him to be there because he draws people.
He qualified.
He sells a lot of equipment. He sells a lot of popcorn, a lot of hot dogs, and whatever else they're selling at these golf tournaments. He hasn't played a lot of golf over the last 10 or 12 years. He's got osteoarthritis.
He still plays.
Do you realize how painful osteoarthritis is?
I have it myself.
I've got it, too.
And Denny, you had to retire because you had a bad arm, okay?
Right.
That happens. Injuries happen.
Absolutely. But that does, if there's a way for you to still continue to play, I think he should be admired. I think he should be respected. And you know what? There was one other player, I think, that had a wheel. Casey Martin. So I don't have any trouble with any of the seniors playing in a golf cart. I don't think the general public cares one way or the other, to be honest with you.
What do the other players feel?
I got news for you guys, okay? You didn't do your homework. You missed a story this morning. This controversy has been settled. John Daly is going to be allowed to use his cart, but the other guys in the tournament are going to tee off from the women's tees.
That's okay.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
I don't care.
It's just should.
I'm kidding.
I know you're kidding.
You
know who he is?
Controversy.
Let me finish this. I want to make one statement. You know what he is in the grand scheme of things? He's Mark Fidrich all over again. He goes to Hooters. He serves food out of Hooters. He serves food in the Hooters parking lot. And he's got that relationship with a number of places around the country.
How are you coming from
Mark Fidrich? Because Mark Fidrich was a great act, a super act. And I say that in the nicest way. He knew how to draw people. He knew how to do his shtick. He had the greatest shtick I've ever seen in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
Better than any home run anybody ever hit at any moment. Mark Fidrich did it better than anybody else.
If Mark Fidrich is going to Hooters, Denny, it's because he was 25.
Not talking about Mark Fidrich. I'm talking about Daly because he's got a business relationship there on top of being able to look at the scenery.
All right. I started to say that you guys have also apparently, because you haven't brought it up yet, missed the biggest controversy in golf this week. And this is the very vitriolic, very bitter war between Brooks Koepka and Brandel Chambly. Do you know about this?
Yeah, but I don't think people care, but go ahead.
Oh, you don't think people care? I hold it right here. I printed it out off the internet.
If it's on the internet, it must be true.
Go
ahead.
The deal is, Brandon Chambly apparently appeared in this ESPN annual body magazine, like stripped down the way they all do. And to make sure he looked his best, he lost a little bit of weight because he wanted to make sure his body looked great. So Brandel Chambly just destroys him on the air. He said that it was reckless self-sabotage, that's a quote, for, quote, vanity reasons that led Brooks Koepka to do that. Chambly says his talent is undeniable, but I've heard people say this guy's really not that tough. He's not that accomplished. I don't know, somebody won those two U.S. Opens.
Are you kidding?
So Koepka
he's won all these.
What is this?
He's won majors, the right and left.
So Brooks Koepka is now ripping Randall Chambly. Chambly then says he points to Dustin Johnson and Rory as the likely two who could hang out now the Tiger's back, mentioning the top three players in the game. And then he goes on. He also says John Rahm and he says Jordan Spieth. He doesn't bother to mention Brooks Koepka. And Brooks doesn't like that too much. And I understand.
Yeah, well.
Well, that's wonderful. Let's talk about the White House.
Wait a second. Last thing. The reason I'm upset with Daly, I think it is an unfair advantage. Oscar Pistorius with the two prosthetic legs could have won an Olympic gold medal because they let him in. That wouldn't have been fair, at least with the wheelchair guys. They put him in a separate division. Martina Navratilova, one of the great heroes of fairness in sports, ripped transgender women for being in track. Good reason. You shouldn't have, you know, it's an unfair advantage. You shouldn't have formerly had testicles and then be allowed to run against women.
These guys had men's strength is what the difference was.
It's just an unfair advantage, and that's why I'm against it. That's okay. You guys disagree with me. I'll let it go. Move on.
Well, let's talk about the White House.
Yeah. Today, Thursday, when we're recording this, the Red Sox are going to the White House. Some of the Red Sox are. Some are not, including the manager, Alex Cora. And so there's been talk about, you know, that it's divided them politically, et cetera. And so Of course, there's a lot been talk about what's going on Thursday. We're divided with race and politics. He says, we know who we are in the clubhouse. There's a group going home. There's a group going to the White House. Friday, we get back to playing baseball. And some of the players have said, hey, Heath Hembree says, if you have an opportunity to go to the White House and meet the president, I'm going to go. Nobody tried to persuade me. They have their reasons why not to go. Others are not going. I don't think it'll have any effect on the Red Sox. Not that it would in chemistry in any other sport, but baseball's a different sport. Chemistry and basketball, baseball's an individual. You and Mickey Lolich didn't have to like each other for you to pitch one day, him to pitch the next.
Right.
In baseball, you're in a little cocoon. You field the ball. You know where you're supposed to throw it. You know when you're supposed to bunt. You know when you're supposed to take an extra base. And so you don't need to interact with your teammates like you do in other sports.
Well, as far as the White House goes, I've visited the White House twice in my career. One, I met Mr. Johnson, President Johnson, and President Nixon, both of them. I was never so impressed as I was the first time I walked into the White House, and then doubly impressed the second time, if you can measure it. It is awesome. And I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, donkey, monkey, idiot, you want to go to the White House. It makes no difference to me who the president is at that point in time. Doesn't mean I like that guy or not like that guy, but it does impress the hell out of you. I'm telling you, every time, if anybody ever says to you, let's go to Washington, D.C. and look at all the monuments, go. It's one of the great thrills this country still offers. And most of them, it's free. It's absolutely free. But I'll tell you, when the guy that most impressed me was not Johnson, but it was Nixon. Nixon went out of his way to talk about, oh, Bob, you're going to love this. I forgot all about this. Nixon went out of his way to talk about my slider. I just forgot about it.
You had a hell of a slider. I would have, too.
I just remembered. And he says, how do you throw that slider that goes down so quick? And I said, Mr. President, if I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Wait a minute.
Uh-oh. That's a jail term.
Wait a second.
Right,
did you not read, because Brandon did not give me a printout of the letters today that we got or the comments. Wasn't there one about you talking about a slider in there? Did you conveniently leave that out?
I think he left it out.
No, I didn't. You jumped out of the notes I was trying to read and went to another subject.
Read the one about the slider, which I thought was outrageous, and I interrupted you.
Some guy said I was an idiot for daring to argue about what a slider actually is with the great, the legendary Danny McClain. And then this one guy down here, this is hysterical. He leaves a comment on our line. He doesn't have enough guts to leave his own name.
Oh, stop it.
He says, also, how about a new Bob Page drinking game? Drink whenever Bob says New York or West Palm Beach. I'll tell you what, pal.
We'd be drunk by halfway through the show.
As we said at the top of the show, as Eli said, Eli's the one who brings up West Palm Beach, okay? And I would think that if you had any kind of curiosity, sir, that extended beyond the tip of your soul, you might write in or call in instead and say, Bob, you know, everybody hears so much about the New York media. You were a prominent member of the New York media for years. What's it like to cover sports in New York? Bob, you also were an in-host in the studio on the Yankees.
He's
going to
give us his whole resume.
Years. What was Steinbrenner like? What was Derek Jeter like?
And
you know what this is? Disgruntled Detroiter syndrome. And they're out there. This guy has just spent 6 months looking at those gray Southeast Michigan skies, shoveling snow, freezing his what's off in 5-degree temperatures.
Wait.
And now it's been raining nonstop in Detroit for what, the last 4 months, not 4 weeks now?
We can't control the weather.
Yeah, he immediately puts himself in the prominent.
Get a life.
He immediately makes himself prominent in New York news, New York sports. He makes himself the star of the New York media. He does all of this inside of 45 seconds.
What did Ali say?
Who?
It ain't bragging if you can back it up, pal.
Anyway.
Well, speaking of jail.
I've never been. I don't know.
Well, no, but you've had more jobs than I've been to jail. I can tell you that.
You know, I wanted to talking about culture in baseball as the Red Sox. You know, they say it's got nothing to do with our culture. It's an individual. And by the way, Tinker to Evers to Chance. Tinker and Evers, Joe Tinker and Johnny Evers, didn't talk to each other for 12 years and were the best double play combination in baseball. So in pro sports, you don't have to like your teammates to play well with your teammates. That's not. Let me tell you a little aside here, okay? Because that's true. Bill Laimbeer, when he coached women in the WNBA.
Still is, isn't he?
Is he still doing it? Told me,
New York, yeah.
Told me there is an essential.
Oh, I said New York again. I got to apologize.
There's an essential difference between women's sports and men's sports in that women, it's important that they like each other. He said in men's sports, Rip Hamilton doesn't care whether Chauncey Billups is a serial killer. Just give me the ball in my spot where I want it, and I shoot the jump shot. So chemistry is different from sport to sport. But in basketball, it seems to be particularly important whether you like each other or not. And the Celtics, based around Kyrie Irving, have just been eviscerated as they've been eliminated in five games by the Bucks. A gentleman's sweep, which I don't really understand, according to Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley. I guess when you let the team win one game, but the gentleman's sweep. But it seems to be fair game on Kyrie Irving that he's not a guy that you can join up with another star on the team. He left LeBron because he wanted to run his own team or be in charge of, and now in Boston, it's not working. Here is what Weber and Marv Albert had to say about the Celtics' chemistry and Kyrie Irving in particular.
It just looks like the starting unit of the Celtics just don't play that well together, and that's because you don't trust that you'll see the ball again. And I tell you, I've been on teams like that. It's no fun to play where it's not a lot of trust.
Brown for Kyrie, who fires one and again way off.
That was an air ball.
So there you see. And Kyrie has talked all season long, am I going to go, am I going to stay? And you had a quote from Isaiah Thomas the other day saying that there's no way that Durant and Kyrie will wind up in New York together with the Knicks, as is rumored, because you can't have two great scorers on the same team.
You can't have two great scorers, and you can't have two greater egos than those two guys together. Would you not agree? Those two egos would just bomb the first day they were together. One would try to take over the team versus the other one trying to take over the team, and that doesn't work. You know what? I've never seen a baseball team, and I played with four or five different major league organizations. I never saw a baseball team, anybody on any team, try to take over the baseball team.
You can't.
You can't. It's impossible.
It's an individual sport.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is no one even makes an attempt. No one tries to persuade anybody to go a certain direction. Only when it came to union business did it make a difference of which direction guys wanted to go in baseball. But the rest of the time, it was a neutral thing, and everybody listened to everybody, and that's the reason why we had such a screwed-up union for such a long time.
You know,
I will say this about the NBA playoffs since you brought it up. I've been watching almost all the games. I'm so sick and tired of every call or non-call being challenged by a player on the court and a coach. I'm so sick and tired of three-point shots clanging off the rim as both teams in many of these games combine to shoot a little league percentage from out there. The whole thing hasn't played very well with me anyway. And you compare that with the NHL playoffs. We've had two game sevens this week, which were especially sterling. On Wednesday night, San Jose eliminated Colorado 3-2 in a game seven. And then St. Louis beat Dallas 2-1 in a game seven with two overtimes the night before that. There isn't time to argue with the referees and the linesmen on the ice because your game's flying by so fast. And the sportsmanship, this isn't just about the two teams lining up in the traditional end of the series handshake. You see these fans. Have you been watching these games? Look at the Columbus Blue Jackets. When they were eliminated by Boston earlier this week, the fans wouldn't leave the arena in Columbus.
Yeah, yeah.
They stood in a long, loud, standing ovation and chanted, CBJ, CBJ.
Yeah. It seems to me
that hockey games have been thrilling, and the NBA games, generally speaking, ain't been too exciting to me.
What's interesting about hockey, and Detroit's kind of an exception, and maybe the Canadian teams are an exception too, because hockey is so much in our culture. But, you know, the old line in New York was, the Madison Square Garden is jammed with 20,000 fans every night, the only 20,000 fans in New York that care about hockey.
That's what I've always said, yeah.
And so,
me too.
So that's kind of Columbus. I mean, hockey in Columbus, and yet they're able to develop a fan base
that
loves them unconditionally. Can I go back a second to culture? Because what I was going to say
I got one thing after this.
When the Bad Boy Pistons were winning, they didn't like each other.
No.
Trust me, Vinnie Johnson and Isaiah Thomas were not friends, but they knew how to play together, and they had a mission. The culture was a mission that we're going to win at all costs because that's our goal. Whether we like each other or not, there's a way we play the game and the roles we have. And it's very, very important in basketball. And frankly, you know, not being a player, I wonder why a guy like Kyrie can destroy the culture of a team. But it's true. And Kenny Smith pointed out all the shots he jacked up from three-point range instead of finding an open guy. It's very critical in basketball. And it's come.
Getting
to show.
Back to your point, the three other teams that I played in, I didn't see any of that with the Tigers the years I was here, but I did see it in Oakland. I saw it in Oakland, Atlanta, and Washington, whereby we had guys that wanted to be individually recognized. Washington, I'll never figure it out because we didn't have anybody that could hit a cutoff man, make a bunt, do a hit and run, run and hit, catch a fly ball. I mean, we were just the worst baseball team ever put on the face of the earth. But Atlanta, we had all kinds of divisions going on there, and Oakland was even worse because they had so many
damn
stars.
But did it affect the way you played? Did it affect the results in the field? The point is, in baseball,
no,
it doesn't matter.
Look what Oakland did. In Atlanta, it did because of the manager, and that's Eddie Matthews.
Right.
So there's different reasons for different folks with different strokes who wind up doing the wrong thing. I got something I want to bring up. Okay, yeah. 1 second.
Go ahead.
There's an amazing story going on in Major League Baseball that very few people have paid attention to, and you never hear about this kid. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. Ohtani, kid that plays with the Angels.
Yeah.
You know, last year he had 22 home runs and 61 RBIs and he was 4-2.
He's the pitcher slash the only
now
one.
He's going to get surgery. You know, he's getting a Tommy John surgery sometime soon.
Not going to pitch this year at all.
Oh, he already has the surgery already?
No, he's not. Okay. He's not going to pitch this year, right?
He's not pitching this year, no. It's going to take a year.
It takes a year
to recover, but he's going to play. He's starting to play today, I think, in Detroit. I think he was eligible yesterday. I find that to be the most amazing story in Major League Baseball since the season started again. I found it amazing last year.
That a guy can pitch and hit at the same time.
Yeah, I'm telling you, because both take the same amount of time to be good. And this kid is good at both of them. I've never seen anything like
it. His first year, he had a pretty good season.
I just said 22 home runs.
Yeah, this is his third year, I think.
Second year, 22 home runs and 61 RBIs, and he was 4-2 on the mound with a 3.31 ERA.
Yeah,
that makes the rest of these guys that we talked about with the Tigers with their ERAs of 4, 5, and 6. They're chumps compared to this
guy. I think he's the first since Babe Ruth, right? Who was an all-star pitcher.
Well, we had a lot of guys that tried that. We had Rocky Colavito. Colavito played two positions.
Yeah,
Lou Burdett played two positions.
Never at the same time. And Earl Wilson was a hell of a hitter, but he never played the field while, you know, at the same time that he pitched. That's an interesting point you bring up, Eli. I think we'll have to scurry to the internet for that.
What?
I got some other good stuff, too. You guys ready for it?
Okay, I got something. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. Here's a headline in the Detroit Free Press this week, and I quote, Michigan man tells police he stole food cart because he's, quote, a dumbass, end quote. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, wouldn't it be amazing if we had the same thing in sports all the time? Michigan State's Le'Veon Bell turns down $14 million from the Pittsburgh Steelers and sits out all last season. When asked why he would do such a thing, Le'Veon said, quote, because I'm a dumbass. William Clay Ford destroys the once proud world champion Detroit Lions. Bill, how did you do this? Because I'm a dumbass. Danny Snyder has destroyed the Washington Redskins while thumbing his fingers, his nose at that great fan base. Danny, how have you mismanaged
Hail
the Redskins like this?
Grace,
basically, because I'm a dumbass. Now, isn't that beautiful?
Wouldn't you want to see that
in sports?
Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Please help, Bob. Bob, I have a question for you before I go on with the prayer. Have you taken your meds today?
You always ask me that every
show. I have to ask.
What's my response? What was my response last show?
I don't know what. Last week you said yes.
I drink out of my bottle of Wild Turkey to come on with you. Eli, I can handle. You, that's a different matter.
But did you? Well, this week?
I drank my Wild Turkey this morning.
That's all I need to know.
And then some people, they're tweeting me, they're calling me, they're emailing me, saying, you gotta be off your meds to go on a show with Denny McClain, for goodness sake. So I do take my meds.
Well.
Does that answer your question, Foley?
Next week we're gonna start counting the number of times he says I.
Yeah, I tell you, this. I have other stuff, but it probably takes too long, and I don't want to get into it.
Probably does.
But you got the Dennis Rodman story. Now, when did this happen?
It's
that
amazing.
He's ripping
the last
off a
couple days.
Ripping off a yoga joint.
Yep, he went into a store with his.
I had to see that.
Yeah, it was a yoga store,
upscale yoga place.
You know,
and
the thing, he stole some shirts or something. But here's my question.
But it was a coordinated heist with two other people.
Two or three other people. Yeah. But here's my question. He knows this guy who owns a yoga shop real well. He'd have given him a shirt. He'd have given him a suit. He would have given him anything he wanted.
Let's not try and figure out Dennis Rodman.
Oh, boy. That's
from a very troubled human being, right, as we all
when he used to go play pinball with 13-year-olds.
And you know what else he announced in this interview the other day? That he's going back to North Korea. Isn't that a wonderful place?
Yeah. He's his buddy there, right. In fact, he's criticizing Trump for his other big buddy.
You know what?
For misreading Kim Jong-un.
And even with me, that's off base. You know, Dennis Rodman, you do not criticize our president when going back to North Korea. You just don't do it.
Anyway, so he was with a male companion who grabbed a $2,500 crystal art piece and broke it. It shattered on the floor.
Shattered it.
They had smelled alcohol on Dennis's breath, and he had two other women with him who were either he was distracting them or the owners, and it's just another sad ongoing story.
Denny brought up President Trump a moment ago. And he said correctly a little while ago that it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or whatever. And I don't care either. You support Mr. Trump, fine. You don't support Mr. Trump, that's fine. However, Mr. Trump had a great moment on Monday because he actually authored a great suggestion. The Army football team is visiting the White House, as you were talking about, Denny.
Yep.
They're celebrating a 2018 Commander-in-Chief trophy win. So Trump comes out. And he suggests that Army football and Navy and Air Force and everything else would be a lot better if they changed the policy. That is, have the kids play sports, and then if they're good enough to play pro sports, let them go play pro sports, and when they're done, then make them fulfill their service commitment. Now, that sounds like a really good idea to me, because the reason those teams are not any good is because the great players don't want to go there and spend 2 years on active duty in the service when they're done. In the 1940s, Brandon and a lot of our younger listeners don't know, but Army and Navy were like, along with Notre Dame, the greatest football powers in the country.
Right.
And I remember as a kid when Detroit's own Pete Dawkins won the Heisman Trophy for Army, and I remember when Joe Bellino, running back,
Roger Staubach.
One of my idols.
Joe Bellino was great. Roger Staubach, the service academy.
How about Staubach? Yeah. And those guys never would have played there had there been the money that there is out there in pro sports now. So this is why these – I used to go to a lot of West Point games, and this is why these service academies are struggling. So immediately – Trump says this, and the Pentagon announces that it is going to maintain its policy that requires graduating athletes to serve at least 2 years. I don't know, you know, that much about the inner workings of the White House, only what I read these days. But I do know this. If Mr. Trump makes a strong suggestion like that, and another branch of the government or someone else says, we're not going to do that, they're usually gone pretty quickly from the White House, aren't they? I mean, we've been through a lot of people working for Mr. Trump over the last few years.
Yep, no comment on that, but that was something pretty insightful that he said. The thing that I didn't like that he said about sports this week was to just dismiss the technological situation in the Derby where they disqualified the winner, which I thought was absolutely wrong. It wasn't political correctness.
Yeah,
it was an accurate assessment of what the video showed.
And let's not leave that Dennis Rodman a second. Let me come back to that for just a second. Is somebody please tell me what he's saying here, although I got an idea what he's saying. He said,
My Rodmanese is rusty at this stage. I haven't seen Dennis
in a
few
years. Well, this one will light up your lights. He says, telling TMZ Sports, all these guys should be wearing tampons in the NBA.
Yeah.
I guess what he means is
they're not tough anymore.
They're not tough anymore. They don't call enough fouls. How many more fouls can they call?
So wrong. These playoffs have been great. And you know what? It really shows me in the playoffs what a joke the regular season is. Not that we don't know that. You know, they should play a 40-game regular season so each game counts. So they'll play
But
I'm saying it's such a scam because the playoffs are so great.
Who's going to pay the $20 million a year salaries on 40 games?
But you can really tell the difference in the playoffs, how great these players are. I think it's been amazing to watch just the Celtics and the Bucks and the Warriors and Houston. These are the greatest athletes in the world.
I agree with you.
Which the NBA says, as big as they are and as agile as they are. And I'm just blown away at the quality of play and the intensity of the games and how Chuck Daly said against the Bulls, how hard are you willing to fight? And that's what they're saying about the Celtics, not willing to fight hard enough to beat the Bucks.
I take exception to one thing you said, that basketball is the greatest athletes out of all of them. And I think they're close. But I think the greatest athletes out of everybody playing the game besides pitchers are the hockey guys. I think the hockey guys are unbelievable. To be skating
can't
a little
jump,
thin piece of steel.
Can't jump, no quickness.
Little piece of steel.
Who can't jump?
The hockey guys.
Oh, stop it. They go down the ice at 60 miles an hour.
I had lunch with
as good an athletes as the NBA players are. Come on.
I had a lunch with a guy yesterday who said that the MMA fighters are the greatest athletes in the world.
I think they're nuts.
Well, they are nuts. It doesn't mean they're not great athletes. Okay. On that note.
Are they athletes?
No. Don't give us this on that note stuff.
I don't know if they're athletes.
Oh, come on.
I think they're ding dong.
Well, they're great athletes. Anybody else?
Yeah. Don't give us this on that note. We're not on any time.
Well, we're trying to keep it to an hour. Yeah, we're two minutes short.
I want to talk very briefly about an event that you two guys have done nothing but chatter about for the last couple weeks. And poor Doc Emrick. One of the great guys in our industry, if you ever met Denny, you know Doc Emrick, the hockey play-by-play guy from Marysville, Michigan?
I'm sorry, I don't.
No, well, Eli does. At any rate, Doc's, he's the most famous hockey play-by-play guy in the sport. So anyway, he's doing the NHL playoffs, and the people on NBC are making him shill for your event, which I'll have to tell the listeners because you guys already know. Sunday is called Championship Sunday, where they're going to have like 20 English soccer teams play a whole host of matches. And it's all going to be televised, folks, on NBC. And they're making Doc shill. He's got to read these promos. So he's reading one. He says, Premier League current table. Then there's a colon. Top two. What does that mean? I mean, I think I speak English as well.
You're bringing up these obscure...
Obscure on NBC National TV.
Obscure,
Doc
Bob. That's what they are.
We try and keep it... That's why we don't talk about archery. We don't talk about bowling. Lacrosse. We haven't had a good bowling story in a while.
So soccer's compared to archery.
Well, you were talking... What was he talking earlier about? The Koepka... people don't even know who Brandel Chamblee is. So that's okay.
Really? Hey, folks, you guys out there, you play golf? You watch the PGA Tour? Watch the Golf Channel?
Some of them do, and a lot of them watch only when Tiger's playing.
1% of Americans care about golf, down from 5% when Tiger was at his peak in 2000. So 1% of sports fans.
I don't know what that means.
1% of sports fans call golf their favorite sport. So anyway.
Well, that doesn't mean they don't care about golf just because they don't call it their favorite sport.
But they would rather play it than watch it.
Now, so Doc says, and I quote, if you are a Man City fan, he messed that up because they're not fans in football. There's only supporters then. They meant to say, you're a Man City supporter. And he said, a game is left. No, it's not a game at all. It's a match. And he says, what a fun way to finish a season. Why? 1-0 matches across?
And ladies and gentlemen.
Says, didn't get this. So Doc announces that the NBC soccer matches on Sunday will be sponsored by ginger ale and lemonade. I'm thinking, what? I mean, you can't just drink at a soccer match. You can't just drink ginger ale or lemonade. What's going in it? Irish whiskey? Jim Beam? I mean, surely they got to be sponsoring it too, don't they?
But ladies and gentlemen, don't forget about Hall Financial.
actually, a good way to end the show would be to just kind of pot it down and have Bob continuing to talk. like the old rock and roll songs would kind of fade into oblivion. So we're going to fade into oblivion. Thanks for joining us.
Forget the Twitter addresses.
Okay. At Bob Page Sports, at Eli Zaret, and at MU Denny.
MU2 Denny.
MU2 Denny. Check us out on Twitter.
I am you, Denny.
I am you, too, Bob.
And we'll see you Monday from Nashville.
Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Love you, Bob. Don't forget the meds.